great to see y'all. The sun is still out. I mean, it's, trust me, it's out. It's right in my eyes. Well, it's great to be here today, and we're doing the 2020 challenge. We're reading through the Bible in a year. Hope that's going really well for every single one of you. It doesn't replace, we have a purpose as a church. It's to encounter God, to bring others into encounters with Him, and throughout our readings. And it doesn't matter if it's Old Testament or New Testament, we're going to see so many different times God met with somebody. We looked at Jacob last week when he wrestled with God. He struggled with, right, this angel of the Lord, this man, mysterious man, likely the second person of the Trinity. And right before that was another one. It was actually probably one of the most formative for Jacob. But he went to sleep, and God came to him in a dream and gave him a vision of like a ladder or a ziggurat, like somehow stairs, and angels were ascending and descending from heaven. And it was one of those really formative moments. He actually, when he woke up, he named the place Bethel, which is house of God. Isn't that an interesting one? Because how many times are we so eager to crawl up to God, the Tower of Babel, right? We want to go to heaven. We want to be there. And yet what that showed was God is actually choosing to dwell here with us, and which is pretty incredible. But we're gonna look at an encounter with God today. And in this one, it's the meeting that moved a nation. And so we're going to look at Exodus 3. It's one of those passages. My kids this week, when it was time, they're like, "Oh, it's the burning bush. I love the burning bush." I'm like, well, good. and so it's one of those familiar passages. But the setup for this is really interesting. So if you kind of just did the readings, Moses isn't mentioned in Genesis at all. He doesn't happen until he's in the last four of the first five books of the Bible, are a group, the Pentateuch, but Joseph ended, the way Genesis ended was just beautiful, right? It was a victory for Israel, for God's family, and just incredible. And they're in Egypt, even though it's not their home, it's not the land God promised them, they're being provided for, and they're growing stronger during this famine. It's just incredible, God's grace. Well, Exodus starts a few centuries after that, like 400, four centuries after that, and things are, like, took a hard, hard turn. And now the Israelites, the Hebrews, are a stench to the Egyptians. Egypt is strong again. Pharaoh is the most powerful man in the world. And they've got this family that's living in Goshen, this really great area of Egypt. And they say, look, they're becoming too strong. We're going to make them slaves. And that's totally what they do. They make them slaves. And it's a hard knock life for the Hebrews. And so this is the setting where it comes in. And Moses, talk about Moses for a moment. So his story is pretty incredible anyway. But you actually, if you look at Moses' years, he lived to be 120. And there are essentially three equal parts to his life. 40 years, 40 years, 40 years. And in the first 40 years of his life, he was the prince of Egypt, right? He was raised by Pharaoh's daughter. He's got the dream. But he's also got this, he has this dual identity. It's not dual citizenship, but it probably feels that way to him, where he's struggling because he knows he's a Hebrew, and he's looking out at his Hebrew, his fellow brothers and sisters. His mom is out there, right? And they're being absolutely just ravished. It's not healthy. It's not good at all. They're slaves. And yet he's treated like a royal, like an Egyptian, and has tons of power, and so he's conflicted. Who am I is one of the questions he would be asking. But during those 40 years, he has it all. Like, on just a paper, he's got everything he would ever need, right? And then he does this thing where he rebels against an Egyptian, and he has to flee for his life. And so he spends the next 40 years of his life being in this stuttering backcountry shepherd in Midian, in a talk about a foreign land. At least he was raised in Egypt, and now he's in Midian, and he actually helps some women out one day, and their father actually said, "Well, why don't you go get that guy?" And it says Moses was just content to dwell with that priest and his family. And so he married one of the daughters. Like he had everything. And when he, for his next 40 years, he said he was content to just be nothing. He was so done with that life and so miserable. And I'm sure filled with all kinds of emotions and regrets and whatnot. And so he lived for 40 years and he was going to live out his life being a shepherd, just nothing. Except there was an event that happened at year 80 for him, because the next 40 years of his life, he's actually living out his destiny. It's a struggle to get there, but he ends up being a bold and courageous leader. He mentors Joshua, which is really awesome. He's a deliverer of a nation. And he ends up, what's really incredible is he ends up confronting and almost becoming the personal nemesis to the greatest, the most powerful man in the world at that time, the Pharaoh. And, you know, here's this guy who started on the fast track, everything was handed to him, and then 40 years of just blah. The opposite of what he was, right? And God said, "I'm not done with you." But it's that event between the second and third 40s that we're going to look at today. What happened for Moses to have his life get completely turned around, to receive a destiny card from the Lord? And so that's the passage we're going to look at today. It's actually, I'm going to try just to read through Exodus 3, because there's just a lot going on. So let's do that. Start at verse 1. Now Moses, in these second 40 years, right, the end of them, he's pretty much 80. He's 79, 80 years old, okay? Working hard. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. Now he probably wouldn't have known that was the mountain of God. Horeb's another name for Sinai, so this is Mount Sinai. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him. The angel of the Lord is not just an angel. Typically, it's God himself in a manifested form. But the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. So out in the middle of this mountain, like this, nobody's around, a bush is on fire, spontaneous combustion, whatever, it's divine. But it's not actually burning up. And Moses said, "I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned." And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." And then God said, "Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." And he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. How many of y'all have seen the Ten Commandments? The old Yul Brynner, right? Whenever I read this, I mean, I have visuals now, right? That I'm like, oh, I know exactly what that looks like. Well, we probably don't, but it's pretty incredible. Verse 7, "Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I've come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites." All these other people that have taken over that land that God had promised to Abram. "And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So it's really incredible. Not only is this bush on fire but not burning, God is present in this, marks it as holy land. Why is the land holy? It's because God's there. That's what makes it holy. God's presence makes it holy. But he acknowledges, like, we don't know at this time, but it's like 400 years later. And God says, I've heard the cry. My people are hurting. And I've come down to rescue them. And then he says, I'm going to send you Moses. And Moses is probably thinking, oh, no, I'm coasting here. I'm done with that life. I don't want to get back into that. And it's kind of, he doesn't say it quite like that, but this is his response. So it says, verse 11, but Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? So he knows several things. One, he knows who Pharaoh is. He knows Pharaoh. He knows how powerful he is. He knows the way a Pharaoh would think and act. And, you know, the Hebrews might be a large, blessed family, and that's why they put him into slaves. But in the grand scheme of Egypt, Egypt was so powerful. It was the power of the world. Pharaoh was the leader of it, and it wasn't really a democracy kind of leadership either. He was all powerful in this. He was sovereign, they would see it. And, you know, Moses, like, the Hebrews are like just a little dot. Like, why would Pharaoh listen to Moses? He's like, who am I? I'm just a shepherd now. But God said, how did God answer that? He said, I will be with you. And this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Again, it's Mount Sinai, and we'll see that actually happen, right? But we're not done here with the negotiation. Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what's his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. I don't know, you know, we know that from the Hebrew Yahweh, I am that I am, that I am. And if you think about it in English, just the straight I am has sent me, it doesn't quite work as well, but it's this reality of saying, of God saying, I am the great God. I exist. I'm alive. I am here. I'm the God of your fathers. I am. And it's just this statement that's so over the top authority that it just doesn't quite fit for us as we hear I am, but it would mean it's the best way God can communicate to us who he is. He is. And that's what Yahweh means. He is. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. Go, gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord. And so every time in pretty much any English Bible, anytime you see in the Old Testament, you see the Lord, and Lord is four capital letters, smaller but still capital letters. It's the publisher's way of saying Yahweh. Why they just don't say Yahweh? They should. They don't, but they should. But there's a difference when it's the Lord and it's like capital L, lowercase O-R-D. That's just the typical Adonai, the master, the Lord. But when it's all caps, four caps, four capital letters, it's essentially Yahweh in the Hebrew text. So that's, you know, basically from here on out, we have to differentiate a little bit, but that's what it is. So it's verse 16, go tell the elders of Israel, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob has appeared to me saying, I've observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt, and I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, a land flowing with milk and honey. And that's a way of describing a rich land, a healthy land. Verse 18, God says, and they will listen to your voice, and you and the elders of Israel shall go to the king of Egypt and say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now please let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. But God is sovereign. He sees what's going to happen. He says in verse 19, but I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. So I'll stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all the wonders that I will do in it. After that, he'll let you go. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And when you go, you shall not go empty. But each woman shall ask of her neighbor and any woman who lives in her house for silver and gold jewelry, for clothing. You shall put them on your sons and your daughters. So you shall plunder the Egyptians. And that verse seems like it's kind of thrown in there, like, I don't know, almost a courtesy. This absolutely happens. It is the most, is the wildest thought that this could ever happen. Like, Egypt is so power, and these are slaves. Like, it would make no sense to Moses or to any of the Israel, the Hebrew people, that they would actually, on their way, that they get to march out of Egypt, that they're told way ahead of time, yeah, you'll plunder the Egyptians. You'll ask them for gold, and they will just give you the gold off their neck and out of their drawers. I mean, they will just give it to you. This is so, it is just preposterous that this could ever be a reality. But we're gonna see this week in our readings, actually real soon, it's exactly what happens, just like God described. And so this chapter is that time, it's that kind of year 80 of Moses' life that, and really for the next while, month and a half, like we're gonna be studying Moses, and it's really his leadership of Israel, the family of God. He's the one appointed. He's the mediator at the time. Jesus is our mediator today between God and us. Moses is the mediator, which means when the people need a word from the Lord, they go to Moses, and Moses would enter the tabernacle, or the tent of meeting, and he would hear from the Lord, or he'd go up the mountain, he'd hear from the Lord and come, and he would tell the people. Today we have Jesus, today we have the Spirit of God, a Holy Spirit who lives and actually indwells in each of us. The tabernacle has actually come, and we have dwelling with God now, which is totally the way to go. So thankful we live when we live. But isn't that something? And so we're going to be studying Moses. But this whole idea, and often we'll get to pull out some of these encounters with God that take place in both testaments, but even for now in the Old Testament. And there's several things I just want to highlight from this because they're evident in this story. And the first one is this: encounters with God are divine appointments. I mean, God is the one coming to have a meeting with us. And it's interesting because there are times we can set ourselves up for this, and there are other times where we're not looking, right? We're not searching for anything. There was a guy, Dag Hammarskjöld, from Sweden. He was a delegate to the UN and back in the 40s and 50s. And it was interesting, when he passed away, he actually, his plane crashed in Africa serving. But so he was the Secretary General of the UN for quite a while. He was considered a very generous, really cared for a lot of the colonies that were under oppressive regime. He was considered an incredible guy. And but when he died, his journals were published, and it was fascinating that nobody, like, people just didn't know, but when his journals came out, they were filled with this, it was all a conversation with the Lord. and just his heart for Jesus. And he consistently made comment that he was praying that the Lord would give him a life-defining task. And he set himself, like his prayers are just filled with that language, Lord, a life-defending task. And sure enough, in 1953, he miraculously gets elected to be the Secretary General and does incredible work in that. Like, you know, there are people who you can set yourself up for an encounter with God by praying into something, by sowing into something. And it might take years, it might take decades, but absolutely, I have no doubt that if we go after the Lord, he will come and encounter us. I just have no doubt. And scripturally, I have no doubt. How many times we've looked at Hannah several times from the book of 1 Samuel. That's kind of a go-to. But there's so many times that takes place. But kind of what I want to mention today is just the opposite can happen too, where somebody wants nothing to do with having an encounter with God, and God still comes to him. This is what happens with Moses. He's done. he's you know, if he had Social Security, I mean, he's done. He's not looking for another life-defining task in his life. He's kind of finishing up and just going to ride it out. You know, he's got some great stories for his kids, his grandkids of back in Egypt, but I'm done with that. And God met him. And it was a meeting that literally it changed the world, let alone just a family and a nation. In seminary, it's a 4-year deal. The third year, it's like an internship. They call it a vicarage. I don't really know what vicar means other than it's like you're an intern. And Andrea and I got assigned to this church in Decatur, Illinois. And it was amazing. People from Illinois, like, laugh about Decatur. We actually loved it there. It smelled like burned soybeans because they had a soybean plant. Maybe that's why they don't like Decatur. But it's around 80,000 people. We loved it. And this church was awesome. And the senior pastor of the church, a guy named Ray, had been there for 36 years at the time. Being their pastor, which is incredible. And he was telling me a story. And I can't remember the guy's name, but I was pressing Ray for just because you're in the Lutheran seminary, you don't learn anything about charismatics. Like, there's nothing, okay? But the Lord was stirring things in me, and I was pressing him for questions, and he didn't really have answers other than but he's like, you know, there was, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he told me the story, and the man had passed away probably 2 years before we came to Decatur, so I never got to meet him, but he was a longtime elder of the Lutheran church in Decatur, and he was Ray painted him as the nicest man. Like, he was a very, very good man, but very, very just a by-the-book kind of guy, and was very curbing of anything that was out of the norm or anything of the Holy Spirit, and just said, no. You know, the gifts of the Spirit were for a different time, right? We hear this all the time, for a different era, but in today's world, we don't have those things. Nobody prays in tongues, nobody, that's all makeup, right? Even though he's a good man. Well, he's sitting in his backyard leading a small group, because he was an elder in the church, great man, and they're in like lawn chairs on there in the backyard, and he has his Bible in his lap, and I'm guessing he's probably like 65 to 75, somewhere in that age. He literally, reading his Bible, flips over backwards, doesn't get hurt, but he flips over backwards and starts prophesying immediately. Like, this is just a normal small group Bible study in your backyard on a nice sunny day. And he ends up praying in tongues. He ends up like manifesting things he knew didn't exist. And it changed him completely. I mean, just gave him a totally different heart for the Lord, for the ministry of the Lord, just for so many things. It was, you know, and Ray's telling me this, and I'm like, are you not moved by this? Like, this is amazing, right? And but isn't that something that you can be so against God encounters and not even believe they can happen and not even believe that the Lord can come in power and meet with you in such a way, and he can still find you. He totally can. And so that's what Moses was doing. It doesn't mean Moses stopped believing in God. It doesn't mean any of that. But God found him. And God came after him, met with him. And this meeting, literally, it changes the world as we keep going. So I love that. Encounters with God, they are divine appointments, whether we're asking for them or whether we're not. God still has a greater purpose as he comes in, right? Second thing is, encounters with God impart identity on a person. Every time, this is one of the reasons why I think they're so important. I think we should pray like daily, Lord, come meet with me. Come knock me over backwards. Come. That's a scary prayer, but come. Because they impart identity. So, and Jacob, last week we looked at that, right, with Jacob at the Jabbok River. And what happened when God encountered him? He changed Jacob's name to Israel. And he essentially gave God's family, which today is the church, gave God's family the name Israel. And said, your name's no longer Jacob, your name is Israel. Like there was an identity put on Jacob that what Jacob once was is that's you know, that's who you were. He actually said, your name's no longer Jacob, it is Israel. And so his name is Israel. There's an identity being pushed. Well, here in verse 6. So if you think about this, I think I mentioned this earlier, like Moses, those first 40 years is having this conflicted identity, where he's part Hebrew, he's part Egyptian, and does that make you really either? Who am I? I want the privilege of the Egyptians, but my heart seems to beat for my family, my actual true biological family over here. Right? He's conflicted. God comes to him and says, I'm the God of your father, right? Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He puts an identity on Moses that says, Moses, you're not Egyptian. You're Hebrew. You're Israel. You're one of mine. And it took that meeting. It took that encounter. Because I'm telling you, Moses living in Midian is not much of a Hebrew then. His behaviors don't model anything like a Hebrew. But when God comes to him, he imparts an identity on him that's absolutely incredible. And in this identity, like verse 11, when Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children out of Egypt? He's like, who am I to do this? And what does God say? I'm with you. I'm with you. I will be with you, which is so much greater than any sort of ethnic origins. It's so much greater than any gifts or talents. His identity is God is with him. I think about, like, what's our identity today? Yeah, we have our vocations. We have our families. We have all kinds of things that we're quick, right? And when you ask somebody, tell me about yourself, we want to hear about them, right? But you think about what's our truest identity? God's with me. God is with me. That's literally the greatest identity, the aspect of my identity. And whenever you have an encounter with God, it's him coming, right? And it's him imparting that identity on you. And you might have fears. Moses had fear. And the fear might be predominant. Like, it just might be overwhelming. But God doesn't share the perspective of your fear. He was somewhat dismissive of Moses saying, who am I? He's like, I'm with you. You know, it's like, because why? Because Moses, and you could insert me, probably any of us into that, we're so short-sighted to, no, God, I hear you, but you're not listening to me. Who am I that I could? And God's just saying, no, I'm with you. Like, what else is there, right? So there's identity imparted. The final thing here, encounters with God anoint a person for ministry. Absolutely. If you, when you're encountered by God, you're anointed for ministry. And here's kind of the important part of that. So you're filled with courage because when you meet with God, when God comes on you, and maybe it's just one of those moments in worship where no one else even knows about it, but you just feel the presence of God. Maybe it's a time when you're reading the Bible and your heart, you realize your heart is like beating really fast. You're drawn near, right? God is with you in a really amazing way. That courage is incredible. But here's the thing. For your ministry assignment, your courage is almost certainly not enough. We'll see this. I love Joshua 1:9. Be strong and courageous, for the Lord your God is with you. And courage, we're speaking to one of our children about courage, actually two of our children about courage, and because we just know that God has so much more for them in that. And but courage alone isn't enough. And here's why. If you look at verse 19, that the Lord spoke, right? So he says, hey, look, the elders, they'll listen to you, right? So you can go to Pharaoh. But in verse 19, he says, but I know that the king of Egypt will not let you go unless compelled by a mighty hand. He's saying, look, you'll have all the courage, you'll need all the courage in the world just to get to Pharaoh and to speak the words, but it won't be enough. He will not be compelled except for a mighty hand that's going to intervene. And it's not Moses' mighty hand. It's the hand of God coming in. And that's one of those times when we're marked for ministry. Courage is required. You can't evangelize to somebody if you don't converse with them, right? Like, that takes amazing courage. But you're also not the person talking somebody into faith. It takes a mighty hand of God. That's ministry, right? Serving is same type of way. Unless we're compelled. There has to be a dependency on the Lord. You have your encounter with God. You're filled with courage from the Lord. But that courage is not the free license to go run off and do anything in the name of Jesus. It's that identity that's also spoken, I'll be with you. And it's the dependency on Jesus being with you as we do ministry. That's what it is. It's the most ridiculous thing in the world, the most ridiculous assignment in the world, that Moses would be told, go to the most powerful man. There's not a comparison today other than maybe I'm trying to think with President Trump, and like, I don't know who though. I don't know. I can't picture it here. But the most powerful man in the world, who is very much a dictator, okay, the Pharaoh, and just a slave, a speaker for a small group of slaves to come and demand to be let out 3 days' journey, which is a total escape. They're working on building two major cities at the time. Okay, like there's no way Pharaoh's going to listen to them. And he's going to say, who's your God? I've never heard of your God. Yahweh? Really? Like, it's so ridiculous that this would happen. And it's ridiculous that they would plunder the Egyptians when they leave. But God has spoken. He gave an encounter. There's a ministry assignment that's been delivered. And well, this week, we're going to have some fun reading, aren't we? So let's pray. Jesus, thank you. Thank you for giving us the sight and the vision to read and see the mighty hand of our God. And Lord, as you encountered Moses, you met with him and you end up moving an entire nation and transplanting a family of God through his leadership. Lord, it's not his might at all. You equip him to be mighty. But you know that his identity is not in himself. It's in who you are being with him. And Jesus, we want to sign up for that. Jesus, in whatever our assignments are, that we would cling to a dependency on you. Lord, I think it's one of the most refreshing aspects of a character when you see a humility in someone who's doing mighty things. And you see a humility and a surrender to King Jesus. And Lord, let this church be filled with mighty men and women and mighty boys and girls, but who are fully surrendered to you, seeing your hand and seeing that the greatest part of their identity, the greatest task on their resume, is that you're with us. We love you, Jesus, and bless you this day. Amen. All right.